Live from the North Phoenix Chamber of Commerce headquarters in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, alongside Chairman of the Board and owner of Achieve Results Consulting, Gordon Parkman. Gordon, always nice seeing you. I'm not kidding you.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you, David.
You're more than welcome. And, of course, North Phoenix Chamber of Commerce, a great place, great headquarters, despite the heat outside. Very hot.
Very comfortable in here.
Really comfortable in here. We're going to have the dancing girls here in a minute.
Yes.
No, after the show, perhaps, and invitation only. Anyways, this is the North Phoenix Chamber of Commerce Radio Hour, and reserved especially for your honored guests and, I mean, members, I should say.
Yes.
And then you have a drawing every...
Every month. We have a show every month.
Every month here, and it's a great opportunity for members to get some exposure and to have fun on the radio and really show what their specialties are and what they do. And that's always... Very important.
Well, I think that is really the whole key, because what it does is provides them an opportunity to, again, get the word out about their businesses. And you never know who's listening and said, oh, gosh, I need one of those.
That's right.
And now I know who one of those is.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a really good thing, and it's a nice benefit for the members of the North Phoenix Chamber. So you can always go to the website. What is that? The NorthPhoenixChamberCommerce.com, I believe.
Yes.
And sign up, join great mixers, great events going on all the time. Truly the best chamber in the state.
We think so.
No doubt about it. Anyway, we have a very special guest in studio today. We have Howard Snader, board-certified expert criminal law. Howard, welcome.
You're scaring me right out of the gate, Dave. Thanks
all
for
right.
having me. But when you talk about members getting exposure, that could be taken definitely the wrong way.
That's right. And you do deal in those areas of sex crimes, I suspect. They would probably fall under that category.
Absolutely.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll try to have time. We're on for an hour, so we'll try to hit all the things you do. And let's just mention some of the things you do. Well, anything probably dealing with criminal law, DUIs, domestic violence, how to deal with cops would be a subject that people may want to know about. What other type of things do you deal with?
I deal with everything and anything in criminal law. That could be everything from a leash law violation or a neighbor dispute that arises or gets up to the level of a criminal offense to homicide cases.
Wow. Homicide, really?
Really.
Man, I thought that might be a specialty.
There, if it's a capital case where the death penalty is on the line, then there's a second type of certification you can get. But I'm one of 100 attorneys in the entire state that's board certified in criminal law,
wow.
But I'm not certified in capital matters.
That is amazing. Let's replay the O.J. Simpson trial and comment. I'm just kidding. That would be another show, though. That would be interesting to pick apart that, because everyone did, but it might be old news. But still, it's fascinating what happened there.
The criminal system, you know, when you talk about O.J., and I said it way back when, 20 years ago, that the system showed what exactly it's designed to do, which is allow the one guilty man to go free so that our system supports that requirement of the government that they prove you guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And that was the first time, at least in my lifetime, where I honestly thought somebody got away with murder. But the system is designed to hopefully protect that one innocent person. And in doing so, sometimes the bad guy does get away.
Well, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Absolutely.
Clever by Johnny Cochran. Was he a great attorney?
He did a fabulous job in that trial, and he made a name for himself, and he developed a wonderful law firm out in L.A. that continues to this day past his death.
Yeah, and, you know, just real quickly, I heard, I don't know where I heard it, but I heard through the grapevine, and maybe you have comments or not on this, that after that trial, I think Johnny actually was convinced O.J. did it, and he never really talked to O.J. after that. He didn't want anything to do with him. Any rumors to that effect?
I've never heard anything one way or the other on that.
Okay, I'm going to believe you, Howard.
And most attorneys, in a case where you have some serious issues about whether or not your client did it, are never going to ask your client that question.
Okay, that makes sense. But do you ever not take a case if you think, hey, this guy's just a cold-blooded murderer?
You know, it's kind of funny. It's the murderers I understand. I don't understand my child molesters. But I personally take on any case There are some attorneys that will not take on the sex crimes.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So they have certain preferences based on your own values or you know, how you view.
There's some attorneys that believe to the point that certain drugs should be legalized. They'll only do drug cases and stay away from everything else. So they have a political bandwagon or a personal bandwagon that they jump on and focus on that. I believe everybody's entitled to the best defense available, and I want to be the person giving it to them.
Which is great. I think we're going to get an inflow of attorneys from Colorado and Washington, especially with marijuana cases, since there probably won't be any after they allowed, recreational drugs, I guess they call it?
I'm not sure what they call it. The only thing I know is it's leading to an increase in traffic stops up north, especially with people that have Colorado plates, because the Highway Patrol is targeting those vehicles.
Interesting.
Just under the assumption that, hey, maybe. And
yeah.
If that, hey, maybe proves true on this side of the border, you're committing a felony.
So it's legal in Colorado, but if you drive right over to the next state, you better dispose of that real quick.
You better dispose of it prior to entering Arizona, and you better have a medical marijuana card, and you're still potentially looking at DUI, if not possession charges.
So you could be perfectly okay, like 3 feet in Colorado, and you drive over to Arizona, you can get hit. Do you think there'll ever be a case that comes to trial where the defense will be, well, wait, I was okay driving here, and even though I may have smoked a few, do you think that's a defense?
Well, the Arizona Supreme Court just a couple weeks ago came down with a decision that, in some language, indicated that it was too far afield that you could end up in exactly that predicament where you're illegally in Arizona committing a DUI if a metabolite of that of the marijuana is in your system.
Yeah.
And the problem is the metabolite can stay in your system for days or weeks.
Yeah.
So it's possible to consume it outside Arizona, come into Arizona. So now the issue is, where did the crime take place?
Yeah.
So there are all sorts of issues going up and down the appellate courts. There's no clear-cut answers on anything. The law has given some guidance, but there's still so many issues out there. It's going to have to be looked at on a case-by-case basis.
That is really incredible. I wonder also, I'm just thinking of all these questions now on related to what you do, I know, but like even drug testing for employers. What if an employer group is in Colorado and Arizona and, you know, you're okay and they send you, you got to do a quick assignment and then boom, they fire you. Hey, not a good strategy to fire someone that you can't fire in Colorado.
I mean, the bottom line is now you're integrating all the marijuana laws,
yeah,
combining that with the federal stuff, the employment law. Once you get wrapped up into a criminal case, you might have child custody issues come up because it's a crime in one place but not in another place.
That's a good point. I never thought of that.
So these issues are all out there, and if you're ever thinking that you might be a target of a criminal charge or looking at facing a criminal charge, you've got all these collateral angles that, you, quite frankly, your average defense attorney may not even be thinking of. At least I'm aware of it. Whether I can get the answers
yeah.
is another question, but at least I know what questions to ask.
And that's important, at least know the issue. You may not know the answer, but those who don't even know the issue may miss the big picture or even the small picture, and it won't be good for your client.
Absolutely.
I agree. I don't know if you know this. I'm also a CPA, former tax auditor for the government. So I also think this is very important in my profession, too. If you don't see the issue, and you're defending someone, let's say, in an audit or whatever with the IRS, and if you don't even know the issue, you know, you may lose something because the IRS may not know the issue.
Right.
So it is very interesting. Gordon, I'm sure
yeah.
as a consultant you see that too.
And I think one of the things that I was going through my mind, and it's like any other business, I mean, do you have a particular target market?
I can answer that on a couple of different things, and that's one reason I actually joined the chamber. Because it took me a while to identify my target market. I've represented juveniles as young as 8 or 9, up to senior citizens pushing 90. So it really doesn't matter in terms of age, demographics, it's every race, it's every religion. So I was trying to figure out what my target market is, but honestly, my target market is going to be that 20 to 35-year-old black sheep of the family. So I'm looking for the families that have strong core values, and they got the one person in the family that's always the troublemaker, or it's the one teenager or young kid in the 20 to 35 range, wrong friends, wrong place, wrong time, you get that call in the middle of the night. So I really like to think that I target the families, and in many cases I'm retained by the families.
Yeah.
So it's the families coming together that realize, hey, this is one time we got to join forces here. We got to get Johnny some help, and that's where I want to go, is to be out there, have my name out there, so when the family has a problem, I can identify the problem. If I can help them, great. If I can send them to other professional sources, great.
You know, I think that's a big market, though.
It's a huge market.
Yeah,
well,
and I think it's also an incredible resource that you provide families. That it's like, again, let's go back to this. A lot of people don't realize the importance of just that. You know, I mean, I've known a number of different people who son gets in a problem or the daughter. I mean, everything else is really cool. All of a sudden they happen to be at the wrong place, wrong time, doing something stupid. Okay. And the family has no idea who to call.
That's just it. I want to make sure, you know.
No, really. I mean, it's like, I think you were, I think you were making a comment before we went on the air. You need to have in your phone. And I'll let you say what you're suggesting, because I don't want to misquote what you said.
Before we went on the air, I was saying that you should have my phone number in your phone. You may not need it today, tomorrow, a month from now. You might need it a year from now. And you're not going to remember my name. So just put criminal law attorney, put my phone number, 602-957-3300. Just criminal law attorney, 602-957-3300. At the very least, you'll get your questions answered. And in this arena, there is no stupid question. Even the clients, unfortunately, that have been through the system several times, they still have questions. So for those that are completely naive, first time through the system on any level, you got the government wanting to take away your life, your liberty. They want to take away your money. They want to ruin your reputation. If you don't talk to an expert, I don't know what's holding you back.
Yeah, I totally agree. And your website, too, www.snaderlaw.com.
It is.
And that's S as in, actually, S as in Sam, N as in Nancy, A, B as in Dave, E, R. And that should be easy to find. And I agree. I think it's invaluable. And I think there are certain professions that you should always have at least try to develop a relationship with, at least maybe. Lawyers are the first one I can think of. As a CPA, I say you may not need an attorney now, but you better know an attorney in case you got to call them, so they know you already. Now, in your case, they should have at least your number. I don't know if you want them to call and say hi. Other attorneys with transactional stuff that are on the team, you know, might be a little bit easier just to call and get a relationship, go to lunch, whatever. But at a minimum, I agree, you should have your number, because when something happens, good luck trying to search and understand who to call.
The problem is when you run that search, Google's real good at popping up those attorneys that
pay money.
Yeah, pay pay-per-click. You don't know if they really know what's going on. You know, and then you got to do your due diligence and go 2, 3, 4, 5 attorneys down, maybe onto a second page.
Yeah.
The last time I looked in the yellow pages, there were over 200 attorney pages.
Oh.
So go figure out who you want to hire. Okay, so
not easy.
The internet's the way everybody's going, and there's no guarantee that the person you pull up number one on the search engines, whether it's me or somebody else, knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
The board certification says that not only am I a barred attorney by the state of Arizona, but I've also gotten the secondary certification as an expert. And that was a 2-year process.
Wow.
Most attorneys don't do that. It's got to be renewed every 5 years. So it just tells you that I've done a lot of trials. I've done a lot of criminal work over 25 years.
Really? I know you're going to say, I just want to interject. You look too young to be in the business 25 years. Go ahead, Gordon.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, right? No, really, you do. I'm really shocked. You look way too young for 25 years.
When I started with the red hair, people can't see me, but with the red hair, I look like Ron Howard, so just Opie out of Mayberry. And one of these days, I'm hoping I go white, because a lot of times I play the Andy Griffith Matlock role.
Wow.
And I just want to go white so that I can at least earn the respect of my peers that I still got the red hair.
Well, that, right, Gordon?
I
thought you were.
You started when he was probably 7 or 8.
I thought you were in your 30s or something.
I was a prosecutor in 1989. hung around for about 2 years in the Maricopa County Attorney's Office prosecuting narcotic cases, and then they put me over into a trial group. And then the only guy who beat me turned around and offered me a job, and I've been doing defense work since the end of 1990.
Nice. Good experience. You know Bill Montgomery?
I know Bill. He's not going to remember me, but I know Bill.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's been on our show like 6 times, and we had even a live debate when he was running the first time against I forgot the libertarian attorney. I forgot.
I don't remember who's running.
His name. But anyways, it was a friendly debate, though.
Yeah. Anybody but Andy Thomas.
It wasn't Andy. I know that.
Andy was not allowed.
Yeah, but very cool guy.
Now, do you have your own firm?
I have my own practice. At the moment, when you hire me, you get me. I may or may not be expanding here in the future, but the bottom line is I've always taken personal attention for my clients. I like the hands-on approach. I like to get to know my clients, and I think that that's the best way to serve them well.
I would agree, I could tell you story after story about that situation when you grow too quickly. The clients start to wonder, well, why don't I see the guy that, you know, brought me into the firm? Now you got younger guys, and I agree with you totally, and that's a different story for a different day. Anyway, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk specifically now about DUI. I think that's important, especially if you're driving down Arizona freeways. It says drive drunk, get nailed, or something like that. It's all over the place, and I'm sure there's some stories that you have, Howard, about that very topic, and we'll also get into domestic violence. Why did you want to do what you want to do? You know, what's the why behind the story? And this is Breakthrough Thinking. It's the North Phoenix Chamber of Commerce Radio Hour, and we'll be right back.
Money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. It's the North Phoenix Chamber of Commerce Radio Hour. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Gordon Parkman, Chairman of the Board and owner of Achieve Results Consulting. And, of course, we have special in-studio guest Howard Snader, a board-certified expert in criminal law. Very important to know someone of his expertise. Very, very important because, well, hopefully you never need a situation like that, but if you do, you better know someone. You better know them right then and there. I'm going to give out your phone number again. I think it's so important. 602-957-3300. 602-957-3300. Website, www.snaderlaw.com. Very, very important. Howard, let's just start with some DUI, because I guess the 4th of July, people seem to like to drink, it appears. Is that what you find during certain holidays, especially hot day in Phoenix, Arizona?
You know, that the myth is true. People drink a lot around the holidays. What did I hear today in the Arizona Republic was reporting almost 400 arrests over the weekend.
Oh, boy.
So that's a lot of work on the police officer's part, and they are specifically trained to look for impaired drivers. So they get out of the academy with an eight-hour day learning how to do all that stuff, and a group of those officers during their career will go out and get additional training, and they target anybody they believe to be impaired, and they're looking for any vehicle violation to pull you over. If they smell an odor of alcohol, it's going to go downhill from there.
Now, let's say you get pulled over. I've heard various things about this. Do you have to take the alcohol test? I mean, can you refuse it? Can you say, I mean, what can you do?
Let's back up.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have your traffic stop. First of all, hopefully you're actually stopping for the officer, because I've had those situations where they do the slow chase, or they speed away at high speed. And the bottom line is, if you do not respond to the officer attempting to pull you over immediately, now they can start prosecuting you for a felony for unlawful flight, or a failure to yield, or a failure to obey an officer. There are all sorts of other things that can go underneath the DUI, where a DUI is a misdemeanor. If you don't pull over right away and they actually get you for the unlawful flight, now you're talking felonies.
And so, what does that mean then? Do you have to go to jail? Or
if for the unlawful flight?
Yeah.
You don't have to go to jail, but I will tell you, as a matter of policy, you will go to jail that night. You will see a judge within 24 hours. They will set your release conditions, which may or may not be met immediately, and you could sit there for a while.
Oh, geez. In the tents?
No, that's actually at 4th Avenue Jail, which is worse than the tents.
Oh.
So you don't – the tents are for the most part, it's post-sentencing incarceration.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know that. So definitely stop. You see
definitely
that flashing siren.
Stop in a safe location.
Yeah.
I'm assuming nighttime stops, but if you can, try and pull over in a safe manner. Know that the officer, those are the scariest things for him to do, is make a traffic stop, especially on the roadway.
Yeah.
The officer's going to pull in behind you. We all see that, but most of us are unaware that he's actually pulling out an extra foot, maybe if he can, to the left, to give himself a buffer using his car as a block, so hopefully he doesn't get clipped. Goes around to the passenger side again to get away from moving cars. Tries not to go in between the cars, because we've all heard those horror stories where the officer is going to get hit, or the car gets hit and then hits him. So you want to be in a place where you can stop comfortably, safely. If it's at nighttime, turn your dome light on. Put your hands on the wheel. Turn off the ignition. And when he knocks on the window, lower the dang thing. Okay. You don't want him banging on the window. You don't want him having to go through any undue stress or fears that you're not compliant. And then at some point he's going to be in a position to ask you what's going on, or do you know why I stopped you? You have two options. You can tell him the truth. Actually, three. You can tell him the truth, you can lie, or you can feign ignorance. And the bottom line is, anything you say to him can be used against you, whether you've been Mirandized or not. So when he's actually initiating that traffic stop, let's say it's even for a routine speeding ticket, you know why I stopped you? You can say, yes, I know I was doing 85 in a 65. Or you can say, no, officer, I don't know what I was doing. Some cops will let you go if you're honest. The majority of them won't. They're still going to write you the ticket. You're not going to talk yourself out of the ticket. So why give him your admission for use down the road? If you want to challenge it at trial, what's he going to do? He's going to come into the court and say, yeah, he admitted he was speeding, he admitted he was doing 85. Or are you going to force the cop to come on in, show his speed gun, show his record, show that it's calibrated? Why give him even the simplest piece of evidence? So you don't have to answer the question.
So you could just say, I don't know?
You can just say, I want my lawyer. You could say, I don't know. But if you're going to answer the question, answer it honestly.
Could you say, you're just a really bad cop? No, just kidding. Okay.
You can say just about anything you want. How that's handled down the road by the officer will go a long way in how the case gets resolved. But you asked about the field sobriety test. So the officer is going to ask you he's going to ask you for, usually it's your license, your registration, and your insurance. And he's asking it to you, boom, 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 three things right away. And that's because one of the things that they're taught, one of the things they tell a jury, is they're looking for divided attention. Can you do multiple tasks on one request?
Mm.
So can you do three things? He just asked you to do three. Can you do them? Can you do them well? Okay. If you're impaired, the answer is maybe, maybe not. But he's looking for that. Can you generate your paperwork right away? Can you do it without fumbling through your glove compartment? Can you do that? Are you obligated to give them that information? Yes. If you're driving the vehicle, you need to produce that documentation. If you fail to do that, that in and of itself is a citable offense. So you give him the paperwork. At that point, he's going to see your bloodshot, watery eyes, because we live where sinuses are all over the place. You've just gotten out of a bar where it's filled with smoke. You know, it doesn't matter, but you're going to have bloodshot, watery eyes to Given. He's going to smell an odor of alcohol, but he may or may not be able to tell whether it's coming from your clothes or from you, so he's going to ask you to step outside. You're going to step out of the vehicle when you're asked, and it's amazing how many people have to use their vehicle for support to get out of the vehicle. For people that are older, you know, the knees don't bend right away. And if you think about just when you get in your car, just when you walk outside today after work, you get in your get out of your vehicle when you get home, think about, do you use the door handle to actually push up on? Do you grab the hand, you know, do you grab anything to actually help you exit the car? We all do it as a matter of fact. The officer says you're using the car for assistance because you're impaired.
Mm.
Okay? Then as you're walking back, mind you, you're on the driver's side. So the traffic's going right by you. You have two options. You can put your hand on the vehicle as a security blanket, or you can walk without using your hands on the vehicle. If you have your hand on the vehicle, the officer tells the jury you're using the vehicle for assistance.
Wow.
Now he gets you back to the side, away from the vehicles, and with traffic going by you, now he's going to ask you other questions about where you've been, how much you've had to drink, all those fun things. You don't have to answer those questions. A lot of people start to freak. You know, I don't want to deny it, but I don't want to tell them everything. You don't have to answer the question. This goes back to what I was saying. Your immediate response was, please talk to my lawyer. The only thing you're obligated to give them is the information on your driver's license, your address, your name, your date of birth. That's it. And beyond that, ask for a lawyer.
So if you don't have a lawyer, is that a problem at that time?
Nope.
You just, it's sort of generic. Yeah, I want to talk to an attorney. Or
most of the officers will play by the book, and that will shut down their questioning, because that's all it does is it stops them from asking questions. But at that point, if he has the odor of alcohol, he has bad driving, you're likely going to be arrested.
Oh, so you won't even do a test.
He'll ask if you want to take his tests. I would encourage you not to do those.
Uh-huh.
You never have to take the field sobriety tests. There are only three that are even validated in some respect scientifically. That's the walk and turn, the one-leg stand, and something they call horizontal gaze nystagmus. And that's done with a pen while they're tracking your eyes. It's not a vision test. They're looking for muscular contractions, involuntary muscular contractions in your eyes. And when you're truly impaired, a trained officer, and I've done the same training as the officers, it's really kind of fun to watch the eyeballs bounce as they're moving the pen sideways.
Wow. So your recommendation, don't take the sobriety test.
Don't take the sobriety test. He says, well, you know, if you haven't done anything wrong, why don't you answer my questions? I want to talk to my lawyer.
And
I mean, you got to have enough, you know, balls,
yes.
You got to have enough
cojones.
Gumption. Yeah. Cojones, mm-hmm. To tell the officer, no, you don't want to play by your rules.
And what are the percentage of the times, if you know this, that they will arrest you right there versus saying, okay, then just be careful?
An arrest is based on reasonable suspicion.
Mm.
Okay, so if he has a reasonable suspicion that you've been driving, you've consumed alcohol, obviously you're not answering the questions. But again, when he goes into his mind as reasonable suspicion, you're using the vehicle for support, you're using it for guidance. I'm sure you swayed or staggered as you walked between the vehicles to get to the side of the road. He has all these things going for him to support a reasonable suspicion that you're impaired.
Do they get in trouble once you get there? They do, and then you have to, I suspect, take another test, a blood test, I suspect. If they're wrong, is that a bad mark on their ability to have discernment?
That's funny. I've never had it asked that way. I don't think that they get dinged for being wrong. It's amazing, though, that they're never wrong. It's always interesting that the only tests that are reported, so the bottom line is at some point you have to take an alcohol test. They get to choose the test or tests that you take.
And then you have to take.
And then you have to take them or face additional sanctions.
Oh.
So that's a whole separate ball game. But at the moment, let's assume that he asks you to take a test and you test under an 08. Great. You're not impaired. And the true answer is wrong. You could still be prosecuted for the DUI even though you're under an 08.
Because
the DUI statute, there are two different types of basic DUIs. I'm not even talking about the DUI drugs. You have a DUI impaired, and a DUI where your blood alcohol is an 08 or higher. So if you're under an 08, that's great. They can't prosecute you for being over an 08. But if you're driving and you're impaired to the slightest degree, not falling down drunk, just impaired to the slightest degree by drugs, alcohol, or a combination of either, you're guilty of a DUI. So even if you're under an 08, they can still prosecute you. It doesn't happen often, but it can happen.
And in what cases would make that happen then? You know, if it doesn't happen often, how would they select when it should happen, when it shouldn't happen?
The easiest one where it comes up is going to be your prescription drugs.
Okay.
So you have a prescription drug and maybe one or two drinks. So the one or two drinks don't
gotcha.
Get you over the 08.
Yeah.
But
the combination.
The combination of the two, and you have a valid prescription, so it's not a DUI drug offense.
Right.
But the combination, you're impaired, and they can go after you.
Wow. So there's quite a bit to this. And the average person would have no clue how to handle this.
And there's no subspecialty for DUIs. It's just something that I've done for, 25-plus years. It is its own unique area of law. You definitely want an attorney that has experience in DUIs going after the information. If you go out, especially to the younger attorneys, some of them may be very good, but again, they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for them to get a feel for it until they've done 100, 200, 300. I'm into the thousands. So it's just, there are things that you can see that other people can't see just by glancing at the case.
So it's 3 in the morning. And do most attorneys, how does that work? I mean, do they wait till, in your case and maybe other attorneys' cases, wait till you show up at 9 o'clock? Or do you have like a call service or something where, you get paged?
At this point in time, I actually answer the phone, and I was called about 3 weeks ago from the lady actually getting pulled. As she's getting pulled over, she's calling me. People are using their cell phone to find a lawyer as they're getting pulled over now.
Wow, so it's
actually kind of interesting because I use that as a sign and symptom of not being impaired because they are able to multitask when they can actually search the web as they're getting pulled over.
Can you use that in court?
I haven't had the opportunity yet, but that's one of those things that can be used.
This lady was doing major multitasking, calling me, saying, hey, how's it going? I'm being pulled over. So it goes right to what, a cell phone or something?
Goes right to my cell phone.
That is really
so
cool.
So to the listeners
yeah.
out there, if it's urgent, please call me at any time, 24/7. I'll
wow.
answer the phone. If it's not urgent, you have a question, please send it to me in an email or
makes
give
sense.
Me a call during business mm-hmm. time.
Yeah, that would make sense. Other attorneys, are they as service-oriented as you are?
Attorneys, I know many of them use an answering service, and it's
okay.
not to say that I won't go that route down the road.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is I've always felt that when somebody's calling, even the hesitation to go to an answering service, they may not get me in time. And that's kind of scary because I want to be the person they can contact.
I don't drink. I don't really like alcohol. But one time I was not drinking, but I was driving from L.A. to – I was going to actually go into Phoenix before I moved here. And I was in Palm Springs. And there was something wrong with the van. I had the van and my kids there, very young at the time. And I was testing something. So I did a little swerve. Because, if there's something that felt, I got pulled over because of the swerving. And I saw the guy smelling like crazy. He looked like a dog, really. I mean, he was smelling, but obviously I don't drink. And I don't think he was just asking me a bunch of questions. But I think he could tell, my eyes were clear and stuff. And I explained, well, I think there's something wrong with the car. And he says, you got to keep this cargo safe because, I had a bunch of kids in. So it was interesting, that experience. That was only time because I know I don't drink, so I know it couldn't have happened.
Yeah, but given your physical appearance, the nature of the vehicle, the time of the stop and all that, don't be surprised if it happens again. And he says, any drugs in the car? And you're going to say, no, sir. Any problem if I want to search? And the average person is going to say, because I know there's nothing in the car. And that's absolutely the wrong thing to do again.
So you need a search warrant, right?
They need a search warrant or they need probable cause. They need to think something's going on. Way back when, my wife, I was cleaning out the car on a weekend, and in between the bench seat, this is an old Taurus, so you had the big bench seat all the way across with the one split. And I reached in because I saw something in there, and it turned out to be this monster butcher knife.
Oh.
Okay. go ahead and search my car, officer. You're not going to find anything. So, you know, especially if your kids are driving, can you make sure that they don't have any of their stuff in the car? What about their friends that they were driving with? Did they leave their pipe, their drugs, anything in the car? You don't know what's in your vehicle. He has no right to search your vehicle unless you consent. So you don't consent. He says, well, I'm going to go get the dog. Go get the dog. Be my guest. And you're stuck there for a while, but you play by the rules, and that's all you can do. But you better be dang sure that there's nothing in your car at any point in time if you really are going to let him search.
What would a butcher knife do?
It could be, depending upon his definition of an illegal weapon, an illegal knife.
Oh, wow.
It could have been bad.
A machete would really be bad.
A machete, nunchucks, you know, all sorts of things that you don't know what's in there.
That is interesting, and I think the listeners at this
or a prescription drug bottle that's not yours, but your wife leaves her drugs in the car.
Oh, yes.
So, again, this is all opening up doors that you don't want opened.
This is great advice. There's no question. Real quick before our next break, listeners probably, because, you know, whether it's paranoia or whatever, will say, the police officers, have you ever seen a case where they'll plant drugs?
I haven't seen cases personally where they've planted drugs. I've had suspicions. I have definitely come across dirty officers. At least the two times I've gotten them hung up, one was terminated within 24 hours. The other one was busted from detective back to street within 24 hours.
Wow.
So it happens. Proving it is always tough. Usually if there is a problem, it's more of an educational thing. Go to internal affairs and just make sure he learns his lesson. And he's a good guy. Or she's a good gal on the force. You don't want to lose somebody just because they're doing something that's just outside the norm when it's something they weren't taught to do otherwise.
Is that a tough defense, though, if they plant some drugs in your car? And wouldn't even know how do you defend that.
There's no way to defend that. You can't prove a negative. You can't prove it's not your stuff. It's in your car, so you have to go after the officer, his reputation. It's very difficult to find out. That's why the two times I've been able to affirmatively prove it, it's been very nice.
That is amazing. That's got to be talent there. And, of course, in studio special guest, Howard Snader, board-certified expert criminal law, 602-957-3300, 602-957-3300. Let's take a quick break right now. This is Breakthrough Thinking. It is the North Phoenix Chamber of Commerce Radio Hour, and we will be right back.
Money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to the North Phoenix Chamber of Commerce Radio Hour live here at the headquarters in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Chairman of the Board and owner of Achieve Results Consulting, Gordon Parkman. And Gordon, our special in-studio guest is phenomenal today, Howard Snader, board-certified expert criminal law. I'm learning a lot of interesting
things. Incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I hope all our listeners are taking some advice that he's offering up, by the way, which is free.
Yes. Phenomenal.
And actually, Gordon, you asked me at the beginning of this entire session, you know, who my target market is.
Right.
And it's that family value group that I really want to get into. I love doing speaking engagements. So if there's anybody out there that wants me to come on in, I like to join up with a family law attorney and a bankruptcy or immigration attorney, go out and do a law day at a church where we're each speaking for 15, 20 minutes and then a QA afterwards. So you get at least somebody that can come in, address the concerns of that group, whether it's a Boys and Girls Club, whether it's get me in front of a group of people so that I can go through some basic stuff.
Which is extremely important, some information no one would ever know.
And before we took the last break, you were asking about, you know, what are some things you can do or what shouldn't you do. I was saying while we were on the break, one of the most important things you can do in this day of technology is hit the record button on your phone. So even though most of the officers don't have video, they don't have audio, people think that their cars are, because they see it on TV, they think every officer has some kind of recording device. The majority of them do not. Some agencies are experimenting with it right now. And I've gone both ways with law enforcement. Some think it's a bad idea. I don't understand why, when I was a prosecutor, a picture of a guy literally handing or a video of a guy handing the drugs to the undercover officer, that case doesn't go to trial. It's on video. And it's the same thing here. Even a DUI, if you're weaving all over the road, I had the first Phoenix City Court trial that went to trial with videotape on it, and the jury was going to acquit my guy. They even told me this after the trial, until my guy stood up in the van and cracked his head on the van and didn't faze him at all. I mean, he really hit his head hard. So the video told a whole different story. Will it occasionally mean that when the officer says he sees a vehicle swerving and it's not obvious on the video, will that mean an acquittal? Probably. However, 99% of the other cases go away quickly, easily, more effectively on the economics when you don't have those trials, just by having the video. If you're driving around and you're not sure what's going to happen, hit the record button on your cell phone. At the very least, you're going to have audio. And who knows what's going to happen. Just remember, you're being taped also. So no cuss words, no vulgarity. Keep an even temperament. And let the officer be the one yelling, be the one using vulgarities.
Now, if the officer knows you're either doing audio, let's start with audio, and he says, shut that thing off, you have to obey.
It's a great question. You're going to have your First Amendment right versus his order of a law enforcement officer. So I would tell you that you may want to judge that situation very carefully. I would try and keep it on, but at the very least, you're going to have his order on the recording, and everything after that will be suspect. Because a jury and a prosecutor are going to wonder what happened. And, you know, why is the officer wanting to take what is happening out in a public setting and turn the recorder off? Arizona doesn't have any law saying you can't record that police officer confrontation.
Wow. So that's in essence, it sounds like you're leaning towards probably shutting it off, but
I always lean towards complying with an officer's order because things only get worse when you don't. But again, at least you'll have you can show him, I turned it off. It's off. Now, he may want to seize your phone. That's fine. You better password protect your phone so he can't delete it. And just turn the recorder off and hit the standby button and the phone shut down. Even if he wants to damage the phone, it's still going to be recoverable.
So make sure it's in your pocket, not visible to the officer.
Yeah, that's so you don't call your insurance carrier on the phone. The other thing you were asking about is, do you have to take the blood or breath test?
Yeah.
Technically, that's a tough question to answer on a radio call. If it's a first offense, I always tell my clients to go ahead and give it up. You're going to be told by the officer. He has to read a form to you. And whether it doesn't matter if it's your first, your second, your tenth, he's got to read the same form with the same information. And that says, look, I have reasonable belief to believe you've been driving while under the influence, and I want to take this test. Do you consent? If you do not consent, know that you'll lose your license for 12 months. So sign the piece of paper saying, I consent. Give them the blood or breath. The alternative is you refuse. Now you're going to lose your license for 12 months, and then they get a search warrant, and they still get the sample anyhow. So on a first offense, just give it to them. On a second offense, or God help you, farther on down the stream, the only thing you're risking is longer with the interlock device on a DUI. So on a second offense or a felony, you're going to lose your license for at least that 1 year at a minimum. And the only issue is when you get it back, some of the sanctions or protections that go into place getting it back. But on a first offense, most people can live for 90 days without a license, which is the standard for giving them the blood or breath test. If you have no major motor vehicle issues, that 90-day suspension is 30 days of no driving whatsoever. And on the back 60, you can drive for work. But that 1 year is 1 year. So you definitely don't want to refuse unless it's your second time or further into the system.
So is there a strategy here then? Even if it's your first offense, if you know clear out you've been drinking way too much, should you just say, okay, no, and you lose your license, but then is there
if you say no, you've lied to the officer. That's what I'm saying. You can't even deny the fact you've been driving. You've been drinking.
I see.
What you need to say is the officer's going to say, how much have you had to drink? I want to talk to my lawyer. Don't even make the denial, because now when your blood test comes back positive for any level, you've lied to the officer. So as opposed to not answering the question.
Oh, because you're going to end up taking that blood test.
You're going to end up taking the blood test.
Gotcha. Oh,
okay.
Either way. Okay.
Last year, Miranda changed. The U.S. Supreme Court came down last June in 2013, and what we all believe is that we have a right to remain silent, right? We're all here raising our hands.
But not on the radio. Silence is not golden.
Silence is not golden, and no longer do you have a right to remain silent in some cases.
Really?
A prosecutor can actually come up and say to a jury, an innocent person would have answered those questions. It's in a limited circumstance. The logic behind it, I look at it as a lawyer and I'm saying I understand the logic on it, but it just doesn't make any sense. And as a result, for the first time in 2 decades, I have something on the back of my card. It's a modified Miranda warning that you can read to the officer. And it basically says, other than providing you my biographical information limited to my name, address, and date of birth, in other words, what's on your driver's license, I want my attorney. I invoke my right to remain silent. I don't consent to any search of me, my property, my immediate premises, location, or vehicle. I want my attorney present before and during any questioning and before discussing any waivers. I'm making these statements pursuant to my rights under both the U.S. and Arizona Constitution. By saying it like that, the U.S. Supreme Court said under the U.S. Constitution, the prosecutor can point a finger at you if, and again, under those limited circumstances and say an honest person would have answered those questions, an innocent person would have answered those questions. I don't know about the Arizona Constitution. You have due process protections there also, and I'm hoping that our Arizona Supreme Court will rule differently when the issue comes up before them.
So are you saying what's on the back of your card you should read or you shouldn't read?
Just read it verbatim to the cop.
Okay.
The bottom line is, excuse me, not in custody, you have no Miranda rights. So when an officer is stopping you on the street, you're not in custody. He doesn't have to read your Miranda. He doesn't have to read your Miranda in his mind until he slaps the cuffs on you. As a defense attorney, I'm going to tell you that he has to Mirandize you when you're in custody. The issue becomes, when are you in custody? And a lot of times that's before the cuffs are actually slapped on you.
Gotcha.
That's a legal argument to be made down the road. But if you're not in custody, a lot of times the officer or detective will leave a business card at your door saying, I need to talk to you. Please give me a call. You'll call the officer back, and he will flat out say, great, thanks for calling. I got to talk to you about certain things. You're not in custody on a phone call. So you need to be smart enough either to hang up the phone, to say, once he says why he wants to talk to you, say, look, I want my attorney. Either he or I will get back to you in 24 hours. Most of the times, that's good enough to stall the detective for the 1 day. Give me a call, 602-957-3300. Again, just throw that in your phone as criminal law attorney.
Yeah.
And 602-957-3300. You don't need it now, but you might need it so far down the road. just have it banked in that phone as a contact.
And at least you should get your card, because right on the back is a nice thing to read.
It's a nice thing to read,
yeah.
And it basically will shut his investigation down. Now, do you need to comply? I'm telling you, as a matter of course, on DUIs are a little bit different, but keep my card handy, keep my phone number handy, call me, and I can hopefully tell you what to do once you're stuck with that needle coming at you.
Yeah, no doubt. And let me give the number out again, 602-957-3300, 602-957-3300. And that's Howard Snader, board-certified expert criminal law. So there's really a lot to this, and it's really quite serious, isn't it?
There's no unserious crime in Arizona. Our sanctions on just about every level are higher than average or worse than the nation for most people. So there's no easy way out of a criminal offense. Even 10, 15 years ago, a lot of times, a lot of these cases would be what we call diverted out. You go to counseling, case dismissed. That might even be true at a felony level years ago. Nowadays, everything gets prosecuted. I mean, it's one thing to go to church and repent and say you're sorry. It's another one to get hammered by Arizona's criminal laws. And if you're under investigation, if you're a target, if you have something pending, if you're on probation and want to know how to work off probation, if you have a prior conviction you want to try and get set aside, that's when you need to be thinking about contacting an attorney that knows how to do those things. Arizona does not expunge anything at this point, so any conviction will come back to hurt you.
Wow, so very, very serious, and you should take this seriously, everyone that's listening. There's so many topics we could talk about, actually, you know, with domestic violence and, you know, many other. But I think something in the news last year, I guess, was CPS, and now you said it's DPS. So what's going on there?
Oh, they just, with Governor Brewer signing off on the recent legislation, they relabeled the agency. I think it's called Department of
Protective Services.
I don't even remember what it's called. I just had somebody tell me that the other day.
Yeah.
But its acronym is DPS, so it's going to get confused with Highway Patrol. So I have no idea why that's going to go that route. But we didn't touch on any of the domestic violence stuff.
Right.
And many people have the wrong idea of what domestic violence is. Domestic violence is not a crime by itself. It's what we call an allegation. So you can have an assault. You can have an assault domestic violence. So like you're thinking in terms of an armed robbery, you can have an armed robbery that's a dangerous offense. It's an allegation that bumps up the actual sentencing.
Right.
So any crime can be one of domestic violence if the victim is basically your partner, your spouse, an immediate member of the family. It can be extended to grandparents and some other types of situations. But generally speaking, if it's a domestic violence crime, that's one that's going to get looked at by specialized prosecutors. Police are actually now learning how to treat those crimes differently on the investigation level. Mm. They're not getting diverted out as easily. It's a whole different ballgame dealing with crimes of domestic violence, and that can affect your gun rights. It can affect security clearances. I have pilots that go through this stuff. And with the DUI, it's one thing, but when they get a misdemeanor conviction for domestic violence, they can't get on the tarmac with TSA clearance. With some issues. So you don't think about all the collateral stuff. I have medical professionals, real estate people, and those collateral consequences can really come back to haunt them on a domestic violence crime. People legally in the U.S. on a visa or permit of some sort with a domestic violence crime can actually be deportable.
Oh, wow. So there's a lot to this, not to mention even if there's a custody case going on.
I have a current client who has a professional license, and a situation came up, and I guess she had spoken to two other attorneys before finally contacting me, and the bottom line is I knew right out of the gate we had the criminal issue to deal with, but we're also going to have to defend her professional license. There were reporting requirements just on being charged, and immediately after being retained, the father came in and grabbed the kid and filed immediate orders for permanent custody. So she's got issues all over the place.
Wow.
And it's not the first client I've had in that situation. And again, a lot of attorneys wouldn't even be thinking of the collateral stuff on the initial meeting, but I've just been through it all. I've seen it all. I know what the collateral issues are and where people are going to need to have help down the road.
Now, 1 minute or less, and probably less, how did you get into this profession, this specific with criminal?
I am a rehabilitated thief. At age 6, I was the person in the back of the classroom in my first grade ripping off 35 cents lunch money from desks. I got a sit-down lecture from my first grade teacher. A sit-down lecture from my parents. A couple other incidents growing up where I was taught a concept of justice and what would be a fair resolution. So coming out of law school, I became a county attorney. I thought that was how I could met out justice.
Yeah.
A year and a half, 2 years into that, when I realized how politically driven prosecutions are, I figured my talents could be better used on the other side. And for the past 2+ decades, I've been fighting for my clients. So if you look at my card, it's a shield. A lot of attorneys say they're aggressive. I am too. But the bottom line is I'm aggressive as a shield, not as the first thing in sword. I want to be out there protecting people before the government takes away their liberty.
I like that. That's a great attitude. And I just get the sense, and Gordon, you probably do too, that you just have a compassion for people. You want to help. You want them to retain their rights, and you don't want innocent people going down.
The hardest clients for me are the ones that are truly innocent,
yeah,
that didn't do it, that are wrongfully accused. That's a small percentage, but those are the ones that keep me up at night.
That's, Gordon, phenomenal guest today, right?
Absolutely.
Incredible. We so much appreciate you. Again, Howard Snyder, board-certified expert criminal law, 602-957-3300, 602-957-3300, Howard, it's been a real honor and pleasure. Everyone get that number as just the criminal law attorney or criminal attorney, 602-957-3300. They won't regret it, I'll tell you that.
And I'm always available. Just give me a call. There are no stupid questions. I want to be able to help them out.
Well, thank you so much. And this concludes another episode of North Phoenix Chamber of Commerce Radio Hour. Howard Snyder, thank you so much. Gordon Parkman, thank you.
It's always a pleasure, sir.
Thank you. Everyone have a great night, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.